Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. We invite you to give us a call after the top of the hour news. Hold your calls until then. But if you want to jot the phone number down, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air a question or a comment to our guest live. And our guest today in studio, it's the third week of the month, so we turn to county staff. And county staff has come up with Scott Chansey, our transit director here for Josephine County. And Scott, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Glad you've come to share with us this morning.
Definitely. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you've been here before, but it's been a couple of years anyway?
Yes.
I think the last time you were here, we were talking about the prospect of a transit hub downtown. We now have that transit hub downtown.
That is correct.
And it seems to be the goal has been achieved of taking a lot of the traffic off of 6th Street. Why don't you give me your assessment of what's going on, what is really there, let the people know what's going with that and any problems you've had overcome in order to get to this point.
Yeah, definitely. So we moved in about the middle of November. So we moved all of the vehicles off of 6th Street from the courthouse, and we're now at the transit hub, which is between E and D on 5th Street. So prior to that, there was approximately 4 to 5 vehicles meeting every 30 minutes at the courthouse location, and it was causing quite a traffic jam. So since that time, we've moved into the new location. We still have one route that stops at the courthouse, but everything else has moved to the new location. So what that has done is it allows every single route to have its own parking spot. And so all the passengers know exactly where the route that they're looking for is going to be. And then there's passenger amenities, which is essentially shelters for every single route. So they're all moving in to that location. We're still rotating in and out every 30 minutes, but it's allowed us to save some time on some of our routes and improve our service overall. So one of the things that we've noticed since my staff is down there and I'm down there as well.
So those are your offices now?
Correct.
Okay.
So, yeah, all of the dispatch staff as well as I have an assistant manager. She's down there as well as my office for the most part is down there as well. So it gives us a great opportunity to see and interact with our passengers, and we've made some service improvements because of that.
All right. Outline those service improvements.
Yeah. Well, first of all, one of the things that we noticed is we have commuter routes that don't operate like on an hourly basis or a 30-minute basis. There's a fixed number of runs per day. And what we had noticed is how long people were waiting around. So we were seeing that people were arriving and waiting for the next commuter bus, specifically to Medford, as well as the Cave Junction route. They were hanging around for, you know, an hour to an hour and a half. So we started to get an idea of when people were riding specifically, and it's interesting because now you can see it. So it's different seeing our passengers daily versus, you know, seeing them as a number on a piece of paper that says, hey, this is your ridership. So it's been a little bit more interactive. But the first thing we did is we added some more runs to the route that goes to Medford to decrease that wait time that passengers had between getting back and forth between there. We did the same thing with our route that goes to Wolf Creek. So we noticed that people were not hanging out, but they were waiting for the next bus, you know, 2 to 3 hours, and that was just not acceptable. It's not good customer service. So we instituted a new kind of a midday run for that service that's going to Wolf Creek. It stops in Merlin, Sunny Valley, and then it turns around in Wolf Creek. And then the other thing that we did is it has allowed us to free up some time on one of our routes. So the route that was going up Bridge Street, it was coming up going between Bridge Street and G Street on Leonard, and that's kind of a residential throwaway. So it allowed us to save enough time that we pushed that to Lincoln. So we were able to extend our service out there. There's some other high-density housing developments. And then the other interesting thing is we saved enough time that on the route that goes around Walmart, the Grants Pass Shopping Center, we were able to reroute that to go to the backside of Winco on, I think it's Fairfield is the road that is. So those are the major route improvements that we did. We'll see what the ridership does. It's still been too early, but we've had positive feedback from all of our passengers. And one of the things that I've heard from the passengers is there's no more misconfusion as to where's the bus. Because on the outside of the bus, it'll tell the route number, but human error or equipment not functioning correctly, the drivers might not have displayed the next route that they were on. So you get some passenger confusion. And so all that gets eliminated by the fact that there's a specific stop for each specific route. So we're pretty happy about it.
Now, I've not been to your transit hub. Is there a schedule there that is posted on a daily basis? Or, mm-hmm. My mind flashes to the airport where you can see canceled and on time and those sorts of things. Do we have something like that there, whether it's electronic or manual mm-hmm. or what? What do you have there?
So the main thing we have is we have paper schedules, obviously. We do have an electronic version of what you see at the airport where the next bus arrival, that kind of thing is. It's not. We have a large TV that we'll set up inside our office that the passengers can see. It's not being set up yet. So we've only been there a couple of months. We're still filling in some of our...
Still working out some of the bugs?
That's exactly right. So we're still doing that. But there's an app that people can get on their phone as well, and it'll help them plan trips as well as allow them to look and see what our schedule is also... where they're standing at a stop when the next bus is going to arrive. So it's a matter of pushing out that information. What I've found is there's not one, silver bullet, so to speak, in terms of passenger information. There's a bunch of different things that you have to just try. So works for some people, doesn't work for other people, so you just keep implementing as much as you possibly can.
Certainly, you've taking this opportunity to try to increase in efficiency there mm-hmm. For the rider. Certainly admirable. Have you added new routes or just adjusted routes?
So we've just adjusted routes, and we've extended some times, not only just the commuter routes that I talked about. So we have commuter routes that go to Cave Junction, Rogue River, Gold Hill, Medford, as well as the one that goes to the north end of the county, which is Merlin, Sunny Valley, then Wolf Creek. So we've added additional runs to those, but the other thing that we've done is we've improved some frequency on one of the routes in town. And what bus frequency is that's the maximum amount of time that you're going to have to wait at that route stop before the next bus comes through. So between the hours of 4 and 9:30 at night, that route was operating every hour. So we've pushed that out to every 30 minutes until 7 p.m. So it allows us to have a higher frequency during what we would call the peak evening service hours, which is between 4 and 6. So we're pretty happy about that. The other thing that we've implemented and added more drivers or capacity on is we have what we call transit on demand service. And that operates our entire service area except for 6th and 7th Street between the hours of 6:30 and 9:30 at night. And the way that that service functions is if a person needs a ride, then they either call our office and book a ride, or they use an online app and they book a ride through that app, and then we'll come and get you. So the reason it's called Transit on Demand is because we only offer it when it's demanded. So essentially it's just like an Uber or a Lyft service, but it's operated by Josephine County.
And what's that phone number?
474-5442, and then it would be extension 2 to get through the office. We encourage people to book their rides on the app, but we do have people in the office available to take those requests because not everybody has a smart device or a smartphone. So for equity reasons, we provide that, but we do encourage people to use the app to book their ride.
All right, that's transit on demand. Is there a specific need for, if I am... elderly or disabled, or does it, I just need a ride to the grocery store?
It's just if you need a ride during those hours between 6 o'clock and 9:30 at night, you can use that. We do have one route that operates through town, 6th and 7th Street, Redwood Avenue to RCC and back. It's running along those areas. But anywhere else in our service area, you would use the transit on demand service to get around.
All right. How's ridership right now?
It's getting better. So at the current rate that we obviously lost ridership during COVID, and we lost about 50% of our ridership overall. We've been gaining it back, but we had some problems, not just within the pandemic, but it created a bunch of issues for us, such as we didn't have adequate staffing, and we weren't able to find drivers to provide the service that we needed. Then we got through that, and then we were having trouble getting vehicles. We ordered some vans or a large bus. I mean, it was taking almost 2 years to get a vehicle delivered, and so we were having some maintenance issues and some unreliability on some of our service. So we've suffered through a bunch of things, not just with the pandemic, but at the current rate that we're increasing, it looks like we'll recover all of our ridership probably within 2 years from today. I'm happy that the ridership's growing, but 2 years is a long time to wait. So we have some plans to increase our ridership, but where it sits now, we were providing about 751 rides a day, and that's just within our routes with the buses, not the demand response or door-to-door for the elderly disabled. Right now, we're at about 522 a day. So it's increased. Interestingly enough, our Dial-A-Ride, which is that service for the elderly and disabled, we come to the door, pick them up, and we deliver them to
them. So that is specifically available. That's mm-hmm. not the rider on demand. That is different.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So we have essentially four services. We have commuter routes that go outside of the city of Grants Pass. We have fixed routes that operate within the city of Grants Pass. We have that transit on demand that operates where our fixed routes aren't running in the evening. And then on top of all of that, we have this demand response, which is for individuals over the age of 62 and those people that have a disability that prevents them from using our routes for any particular trip.
Yeah, is that the same phone number as the demand?
Correct.
Okay, so that is 474-5442?
Yep.
I read my own writing that
time. There you go,
me. Golly.
All right. I like when that happens.
Yeah, me too. Stay tuned, everybody. We're going to take just a little break. We'll be right back with the Josephine County Transit Director, Scott Chansey. Welcome back, everyone. Tuesday Talk Show in progress. Josephine County Transit Director Scott Chansey is our guest today, and we've been talking bus schedules and what's available, and there's a lot available there, more than you might know. And we've been talking about ridership, obviously on its way back up since the COVID pandemic really put handcuffs on everybody. Scott, looking at what you have there with ridership coming back up and not exactly where you want it yet, what is the price for a person to ride there? Is it a set price? Can I buy a ticket that gets me a year's worth? How do the finances work for you?
So we have a bunch of different options, and similar to the schedules, there's not one fare that seems to work for everybody. So we have a combination of things. So a full fare ride within the city of Grants Pass is $1, and you can transfer to any other route that we have for that $1. You can transfer to any other route we have within 60 minutes. So let's say you're coming from Rogue Community College and you want to go to Walmart. Essentially, that's two different routes, so you'd be able to pay your fare when you got on somewhere out at the college, $1, get a transfer from the driver, and then go to the next route and present that transfer and continue your trip. So within the city, and for all of our services, there's a full fare price, and then there's a reduced fare price, and reduced fare is one half of the full fare. So for anyone under the age 16 or under, those with a disability, those with a Medicare card, a veteran, and people over the age of 62, you would only pay 50 cents within the city of Grants Pass. And so we have tokens, we have day passes, we have monthly passes, we have punch cards that are good for a specific set of dollar amount, and there's no expiration date. And then our services that go outside of the city of Grants Pass, our commuter routes, the full fare on those is $2, and then the reduced fare is $1. And again, the same reduced fare criteria apply to that as well. And then we have punch cards as well as tokens, or you can just pay cash.
Tell me about the punch cards. Does that give me a discount?
No, it's you. You still
it's just to, more convenient.
Yeah, you just still have to qualify. And well, what we found is our monthly bus pass is based on two rides a day, 5 days a week for a month, which is essentially 20 something days plus a discount. So what? But they're only good from the first of the month to the last day of the month. There's no grace period or anything. And so what we found with the punch cards is not everybody wanted to buy a pass that was good for the entire month. They wanted to buy a pass or have a pass that was worth a certain amount of dollars that didn't expire. So that's where the punch card came from. So our punch card is worth $20 and it doesn't expire at the end of the month. So that could get somebody a full fare ride, 20 rides with one card.
All right. And those cards are available, I assume, at the Transit Hub?
Yeah, correct. So we sell them at the Transit Hub. Our drivers don't sell passes or carry cash or anything like that. We also sell those to other agencies, human services agencies within the city of Grants Pass or within Josephine County that they provide their own clients with. So it's not just us that's distributing those. It's other agencies as well.
All right. What kind of service hours do you have at the Transit Hub if I wanted to go buy buy something there or just get customer service?
So our office hours at the Transit Hub are 8 to 6 o'clock now, and that's when you can expect that somebody will be there to assist you. If our office is closed, obviously we're still operating. We start service at 5:30 in the morning. We don't end until 9:30 at night. So we don't have staff in the Transit Hub specifically for our entire service area, but it's basically from 8 to 6 o'clock at night.
From 8 in the morning to 6 o'clock at night.
Right,
okay. What kind of staff do you have here in terms of, you've got mechanics and maintenance people and people to answer the phone and drivers. Suddenly this is turning into a fairly significant portion of the county.
Yeah, and I'd like to point out all of our funding is state and federal sources. We don't get, or there's a statewide payroll tax that's specifically designated for transit service or transit service improvements. So we don't receive any general fund money.
No general fund dollars at all.
That
okay.
is correct. So it's all outside sources.
I'll keep those outside sources coming in. We like that fresh money.
Yeah, I definitely like it too. So we have a total of 31 employees in the transit department, and then there's three maintenance personnel from Josephine County Fleet that are assigned to our vehicle specifically. And of those 31 employees, we have 20 full-time drivers, 3 part-time drivers, 3 fill-in drivers, 5 dispatchers. I have an assistant manager and then myself.
Is it difficult to find qualified drivers right now, or is it getting better?
It's getting better. It was very, very difficult, and everyone was competing for CDL drivers, not just us. The school district, other transit agencies in Jackson County, everybody was competing for the same drivers. So we made a concerted effort to slowly raise our wage. The county obviously has great benefits, so the package itself is very competitive. So it's getting better, and I'm not quite sure why that is, if it was just the – I think it was a combination of the wages and then people were looking for more work. So it had been difficult, and but it seems to be an easing up now.
Mm-hmm. For a driver in particular, all you need is a CDL, or is there a specific training to drive the bus?
So you have to have a CDL with a passenger endorsement. Passenger mm-hmm. endorsement, and you also have to have the air brake endorsement. So we require anybody that we hire, we require them to have the ability to get an Oregon commercial driver's license with a passenger endorsement and the air brake endorsement within 30 days of being hired. I don't require a new employee specifically to have a CDL. We just need to make sure that they can get one. And then we train them if they don't have one. We train them. So most of the people that come to us, they typically don't have a passenger endorsement, so we have to send them through that training as well, because you can't just go and take a test and be qualified for your passenger endorsement. You actually have to take a driving test in a vehicle that you're going to be using for providing transit service. So that's a 35-foot bus. So we provide all of that training. We pay for it, which is one of the interesting things when I say that everyone was competing for employees. We had to make sure that we were competing for employees as well, but also that someone else didn't steal our employees after we...
After you've trained them?
Exactly. We've invested time and resources in them, and we need to make sure that we want to keep them on board.
If I'm an attractive employee to you, but I don't have that CDL, what kind of money are you going to invest in me in order to get me behind the wheel? What's it cost?
So it takes about around 30 days plus, you know, to train somebody. So we're going to be spending... and that's it full time. So that's mm-hmm. That's 8 hours a day. We're going to have to train you to provide service on all of our services, how to drive the routes, and then we have to train you how to drive the bus and how to pass your CDL test, as well as anything associated with that. So we pay for all that time, and then we reimburse people the cost of getting that CDL specifically. So It's expensive, but I think, you know, if you invest in your employees and you make that commitment up front, I think it's going to be a satisfying result for not only me but the employee and the county as well.
If you make that commitment up front, you get the employee trained and in the bus driving. Is there a commitment that employee has to make to serve a certain amount of time?
No, there's not. I had explored that, and I know other agencies had done that. I don't think that was legal, so we didn't continue to pursue that. But I think you just need to do your due diligence when you are interviewing people and ask them, you know, what are their long-term intentions. And then hopefully that's adequate enough to make sure that people aren't just using our resources just to go take a CDL job somewhere else. It's happened. It doesn't happen very often, but it has happened, so it's something that we are aware of.
All right. Thank you. Yeah, you're listening to the Josephine County Transit Director, Scott Chancey, here on the Tuesday Talk Show, and we'll be back right after the news at the top of the hour. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. Glad you've chosen to join us this morning. The phone lines are open if you have a question or comment for our guest, and that number is 541-472-1270. If you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment directly to our guest today. Our guest today from the Josephine County Transit Department is Scott Chancey, the Transit Director. Scott, once again, welcome to the microphones at KAJO. You were outlining some of the routes that we and some of the services earlier that we talked about, and some of the costs there that you charge the people. Are the revenues generated enough to pay for the service at all? Does it come close?
It doesn't come close. So that's called what we call fare box recovery ratio. And that's how much of your operating expense is recovered by what you're bringing in through the fare box or through passenger fares. It used to be a little bit higher, but we're recovering about 10% of our operating expenses through the fare box. And that's pretty typical across the transit industry across the United States. Even large urban areas, they're going to be within that range. Rarely will you see a transit service generating over 20% recovery ratio of their expenses through the fare box. So that's why it's publicly provided. So there's not enough revenue being generated to provide those services.
So 90% is paid for by those incoming revenues from the federal government and other agencies.
That is correct. So we receive a funding from the Federal Transit Administration, and when you receive operating money, they don't just give you money. You have to have a local match requirement for that. So we have our local match is provided for with this. It's a statewide payroll tax, but we get the allocation that's being collected in Josephine County. So we use those funds to match the federal funds that we have.
Is there a goal to reach there in terms of revenue generated?
So there, I'm assuming you're talking about, do we have a goal of a fare box recovery?
Yes.
Yeah, that we have. No, there's not anything that's been put into place that says that, hey, the transit system needs to recover a blank percentage of their operating costs through the fare box. I probably wouldn't recommend that strategy. Some agencies do that, and what you see is then they have to chase that percentage and adjust their services. And so some of the services are never going to generate a lot of money Some of the services that we provide, the door-to-door service, for example, that only costs the passengers $2 for a one-way ride, and those rides cost probably around $50 on average because that's individual one-on-one type of service, and it's very expensive.
Yeah, and if they were to pay for that out of a commercial entity, it would probably be 10 times that.
Yes, you're right. So there's the local private taxi provider. That ride is
or an Uber.
Exactly. Yeah. It's going to be $30 to $40 a ride. We do know that there's some medical services, and we do see this for people that are traveling outside of the city of Grants Pass for specialists and so forth in Jackson County. Those rides, I know, are $100+ one way.
We've talked about equipment that you need and the amount of equipment you need. And once you get your head around it, it's pretty staggering right now. And I think one of the things that people are seeing are the new electric buses.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about these electric buses. Good, bad, what do you think?
Difficult.
Difficult, okay.
There's my one-word answer. We looked at electric buses, and we purchased the first two in 2019. And then we just took delivery of two more in the summer, so 2023. So we have a total of four now. We have approximately 22 vehicles in our fleet, and four of them are electric. So while electric's been interesting, I definitely think there's a place for it in the transit in our transit fleet. It's not the answer or be all answer for a vehicle that you would provide or need to provide the service. There's limitations on what they can do. There's limitations on range. There's some interesting things that we get into in terms of heating in the winter, making sure it's the interior is warm for our passengers, those kind of things. So there's been a lot of problems that we've had to move through. I definitely think it's been interesting experiment that we've moved through. There's been a big push.
Learning curve, eh?
Yes, a very steep learning curve at that. But I think that there's definitely a place for them in our fleet, but it's not the be-all answer for this is the vehicle of the future. There are certain areas where an electric vehicle doesn't make sense, and we're still at the limited range capacity. One of our routes, we'll put on 300 miles a day. Obviously, we can't go 300 miles with an electric bus, so it takes essentially two electric vehicles to take the place of one diesel vehicle. So we knew, I knew from back in 2019 that we needed to start to explore alternative fuels. So we did, and we chose electric for various reasons. And like I said, it's been an interesting experience to say the least. The technology's getting better, but it's still not quite there yet, which is why my next bus purchase is probably going to be diesel hybrid electric. And those are diesel vehicles that have the ability to change to electric and go between 11 and 20 miles. And other than that, then they go back to diesel.
Boy, that just raised a lot of questions in my mind. Yeah, mind here. First of all, when I drive by the transit hub, I see the concrete inlays there. Is that to accommodate the weight of these buses? Are they significantly more heavy than a conventional bus?
So all of our buses, the quick answer is yes. So it's concrete because you're parking a heavy vehicle there, and it's starting and stopping, 20 times a day. But the electric vehicle weighs the same amount as a diesel vehicle.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a net wash. And a diesel vehicle, when you take the gas out, the transmission, the engine, the cooling system, all of those things out, and then you put in an electric motor, and then the rest of that weight is made up with batteries. So it's essentially a wash. Those vehicles weigh like about 26,000 pounds for the 35-footers.
All right, so probably a wash between the electric bus and the diesel-powered. You said you explored different fuel options. What other options do you have? Natural gas or propane gas fueled?
Yeah, so we looked at propane for some of our smaller vehicles, but then that means that the smaller vehicles would have to run on a certain fuel type and the larger buses would have to run on a certain fuel type. I'm all about fuel diversification, but the more we can keep it consistent across all of our vehicle platforms, the better it is. So we did look at compressed natural gas, and the issue with compressed natural gas is a fueling facility for our CNG tanks and pumps is you're looking at $3 million.
Oh, just to get the fueling done.
That's correct. And then you have the top. Then on top of that, you have the cost of the bus, which is about $150,000 to $200,000 more. And, you know, in hindsight, this is always 2020. I'm glad we didn't go CNG because there was not only that upfront capital cost for the fueling facilities, but now the Federal Transit Administration doesn't look at CNG as a clean fuel anymore. So there's agencies that have gone CNG and then turned around and had to replace their entire fleet with electric, and you typically see that down in California. But the writing was on the wall when we were looking at that, and it wasn't going to fit. But we knew that we needed to do something. So it looks like the future in transit in terms of this industry, it's the electric hybrid for the moment. Good luck getting a diesel bus. We purchased two in 2023, and I just don't think the Federal Transit Administration or even the state of Oregon is going to make funds available for diesel buses
here. So you can't buy a new diesel bus or get it paid for by the funds coming in.
Correct. So you have to use your own local funds, and all of our local funds is going into match for our operating dollars. So you have diesel, we'll take that one off the table. Then you have CNG, which is quickly being taken off the table. And then you have electric, which is embraced, but like I had mentioned earlier, it's not a one-for-one replacement in terms of for a diesel vehicle. So it's not compatible 100%. And then so the next option after that, and some agencies are going to this, is obviously the hybrid diesel vehicle. Interestingly enough, the FTA will still pay for that vehicle, even though it's a hybrid, even though it's diesel. They look at it as diesel plus it's running on electric, so therefore it meets certain criteria. And then the newest technology that's coming up is hydrogen.
All right. Well, let me ask a question here in terms of efficiency, dollars out of your pocket. You prefer the diesel bus, the hybrid, or the total electric?
So we don't have the hybrid operating yet. So all I have is just anecdotal evidence from other agencies and what I've heard. So that one is going to be about a net wash. Like I said, the electric range of those is anywhere from 11 to 20 miles. So it's not super large. And then in terms of the preference, it just depends on who you talk to. So if you talk to my maintenance department, they're going to love the diesel. And that's what they're familiar with. Plus, it's easier. Cost per mile in terms of maintenance, it's significantly lower. The electric, the advantage of that is the cost per mile in terms of the fuel, which is now electricity, is significantly cheaper. The issue with the electric is maintenance or battery replacement or just monitoring the entire system. That's been expensive.
Do we know how long a battery will last? Have we had to replace one yet?
Yeah, we've had to replace a few.
Oh.
And some of that was done by the manufacturer under warranty. Some of it had to be done by us because it wasn't under warranty. But as how long will a battery last, from an industry perspective, we still don't know. A typical diesel bus is supposed to last 12 years or 500,000 miles. There hasn't been electric buses out in operation for 12 years. So that I don't know question. Some of the manufacturers of these electric vehicles, they're doing things like leasing batteries to you, or you buy the bus and they'll lease the battery to you and then they'll guarantee it for 12 years. What that means is if it fails, then they're just going to replace the battery. So it's kind of it's up in the air still. There's a lot of unanswered questions. A lot of agencies are made a commitment to go 100% electric, and the interesting part is those same agencies are refurbishing thousands of diesel vehicles at the same time. So when you talk to their administration or the managers, they have a kind of a different story than what you'll get from the frontline maintenance workers and employees. So it's a big unknown.
Will all those things transfer to the hybrids?
Yeah, the good thing with the hybrid is it still operates on diesel. So a great example is prior to the new electric buses that we just received, the old electric buses wouldn't get up Hayes Hill. They would get up Hayes Hill, but at the top they'd be doing about 20 miles an hour. So that is a great example of the technology on the electric bus that wasn't there at the point, and so we couldn't ever service Cave Junction or even Medford for that, for the most part, with a 100% electric vehicle. So that diesel hybrid allows you to have the power to go up hills, things like that. You don't lose your torque, but you could still operate within, for example, within the city of Grants Pass on electricity.
One last question on the electric buses, and it's just, how long does it take to charge one, and where are the charging stations?
So it takes from they don't go down to zero, so they go down to about 20% capacity. So 20% back to as close to as 100 as you can get is between 4 and 5 hours. And so we charge them at night. The equipment is the charging equipment. It is the public works facility where we park all of our vehicles. That's what we call the bus barn. So that's where all the vehicles pull out in the morning and then return at the end of the night and get fueled, or in this case, put on a charger, and then they charge for 4 to 5 hours.
Fascinating. Thank you very much. We've got more to do here with Scott Chancy right after this word.
A leap year only.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. And if you have any questions for our guest, there's still time to get a phone call in at 541-472-1270. We're dealing with Josephine County Transit Director Scott Chancy today. And Scott, I want to thank you very much for your time. We've talked about cost and what it cost the people and what it cost to us and what it cost the federal government to keep all these buses running. But it does provide a significant service here. How many miles do your buses log, what, in a month or in a year? Yeah.
So all of our services combined, we're doing about 2,300 miles a day. And that translates to about 120 hours a day as well. And so we only operate Monday through Friday, and it works out to be about, on average, 252 days a year. So that means that we're going to operate about 580,000 miles in a calendar year, fiscal year, and that translates to about 31,000 hours, so it's quite significant.
So more than 500,000 miles a year.
Correct.
Okay, all right. Well, can we add to that, how is Saturday service in the future?
Yes. Now, the million-dollar question is when. So we were ramping up to provide to implement Saturday service, and that was my number one priority. We were ramping up for Saturday service. We started in late 2018. I figured we would start it in about 2019, and then some significant disruptions happened, COVID, and then it was an operator, lack of operators, as well as then lack of vehicles. So I decided that we would put Saturday service on the back burner, but it's still a significant priority, because if you have somebody that's dependent on the transit system and we're only providing service Monday through Friday or 5 days a week, that means that there's 2 days of the week that they have no service in. Imagine if those a holiday came up. And so most holidays now are recognized on Friday or mm-hmm. Monday. So imagine, and there's been, this happened, I think, already once this year, that we were closed or there was a federal holiday observed on a Friday and a Monday. So now that's 4 days out of seven that we didn't operate. And if you had no other option to get around, that means that you had 3 days of that week to coordinate all your life activities, and that's, in all honesty, that's just not acceptable to me. So Saturday is extremely important. The problem with Saturday is logistically, you have to make sure that you have enough drivers to do it, and then you have to make sure that you have enough vehicles to do that.
Does that take away maintenance time?
Yeah, well, it doesn't take it away, it adds to it. Mm-hmm. So let's say on a Saturday, we probably wouldn't have maintenance personnel on duty. They would still be on duty Monday through Friday, and what that means is anything that broke on Saturday, we would have to accommodate that vehicle with a replacement on Monday to make sure that we could operate in full service that coming Monday. So logistically, it makes it a little bit difficult in terms of making sure that everything's up and running. And you have to start with that assumption to begin with, that something's going to break, because you just have to start with that assumption just to make sure that you have enough vehicles and resources to start on Monday, because you can't let something, we just can't just not run. We can't just say, okay, we're not going to run this route on Monday because we don't have enough vehicles. That's just as bad for a passenger as essentially not having the service. So we have to make sure that we have all those things accommodated for before we can start Saturday. So we're slowly in the process of ramping things up. It's been extremely difficult getting any kind of vehicle. Like I had mentioned earlier, it took us almost 2.5 years to get 3 Ford in-transit vans. And that's a pretty common vehicle that is pretty standard. You know, Ford's producing a lot of them. We're not modifying them much other than putting a lift, but to take 2.5 years to get 3 vans, that's kind of extreme.
Scott, I'm going to jump in here because I've got a little less than 3 minutes here, and I know, okay, I want to recap some of the services that are available and numbers that the people can call to take advantage of those services. So on your mark, get set, go.
All right. So the main thing is we have fixed routes, and those are within the city of Grants Pass. They're called fixed routes because they're running on a fixed route. There's a fixed schedule, fixed times, and those are those you see those with. We have stops approximately every quarter mile. And you'll see those signs throughout the city of Grants Pass. We have commuter routes to Cave Junction, Medford, as well as Wolf Creek, operating in a limited time a day. And then we have that transit on demand, where you can use an app on your phone between 6 and 9:30 at night to get a ride anywhere in our service area. And then we do the demand response, which is door-to-door service for the elderly and disabled, as well as those individuals over the age of 62. So that's the quick answer for all the services that we provide.
All right. Did we get a phone number in there? 541-474-5442?
That is correct.
That's the number. And the person to ask for is Scott Chancy. He's got all the answers. Scott, I want to thank you very much for your time today and your expertise, and good luck with that Saturday service.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. AM 1270, 99.7 on the FM band, heard all around the world on KAJO.com. Just a couple of other programming notes coming up tonight, right here on the radio. It'll be Grants Pass's High Caveman Basketball coming to you live from the Heater Newman Gym as they finish their season against the Roseburg Indians. Once again, that's coming up tonight. Airtime should be about 6:15, 6:20. So once again, thank you for listening to the Tuesday Talk Show right here on KAJO Radio, 99.7 on the FM band, heard all around the world on KAJO.com.